We were on vacation this summer up at Clear Lake, and they opened up a new little theater called the Lamp Post, where they had, I believe they came down from the University of Northern Iowa, if I remember right, this troupe of people came down and put on this play. I can't for the life of me remember what the name of it was. Yeah, anyway, the place is called the Lamp Post. They put on this play, and it was really a funny, well-done play, very intimate surroundings, about half building about, well, maybe this size, and set at tables and drink your coffee and watch the show and mingled afterwards, etc. But the show was about this boy who used to climb up on the top of his house and imagine what it must be like to be able to open up your wings and fly. And kind of that wonder of flight that man has been kind of enamored with for a long, long time. It goes on to talk about all the things that man's done, the smarter we've got. We've gotten airplanes now. And he takes you through a series of scenes at an airport that are just hilarious, if they weren't aggravating, because they've happened to all of us. Sorry, Justin. And he goes through, and at the end he gets back to the wonder of flying again. But he has a formula in there that I remember. Wonder equals X over knowledge. And what that means in mathematical terms is, the more knowledgeable I get about a thing, I may have a tendency to be less in just awe, wonder of it, than I am when I know less. It can go either way, but the more he knew about flight, the less he was just in wonder of what was going on. And I wonder if that doesn't happen to us sometimes. Sometimes we just need to sit back and look at God and be in wonder at His greatness. In Isaiah, the fourth chapter, verse 21, 41st chapter. Can't read more than that. That's a bad way to start. Verse 21. This is God speaking, and He's being a little bit sarcastic. Produce your cause, saith the Lord. Bring forth your strong reasons, and saith the King of Jacob. Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things, what happened before, what they be, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, what's going to be. Or declare us things for to come. Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that you are gods. Yea, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it altogether. God being sarcastic because man and man's images and man's gods cannot do those things. In Psalms, the 33rd chapter, and I think Destra used this word in a prayer this morning, 33rd chapter, verse 8, let all the earth fear the Lord, let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of Him. I like the word awe. There are some words in the English language that sound like what they are. A snake slithers through the glass, through the grass. They sound like what they are. But you can't say awe without having your mouth open. Ah. As in awe stricken. And this morning I want us to be a little bit in awe of God. God is all-knowing. In 1 John, it says that God knows everything. I want us to try to think about what it means to know everything. God has no questions. God has no doubts. He knows everything. He knows everything about nature, the nature that we live in. As we discover more and more things, we discover more animals and forms of life that we didn't even know exist. Every year, they discover more and more. God knew those. He created those. He knows them down to the last molecule of their being. He knows them. There's nothing. Try to imagine. Nothing that you don't know. Nothing. He knows everything about you, even more than you know about you. He knows about you. God knows everything about the past. Not like he's read it in a history book. He knows everything about the past as if he, or you and I, had been there. Okay? Because he was there. He knows everything about the past everywhere. He doesn't know everything about the past just where he was, as you or I might. He knows everything about the past everywhere. Everything that's ever happened. Every atom that's ever moved in the entire universe, when it moved, God knew it. Every single one in the past. Presently, God knows everything. He knows what's going on in every one of your minds right now, which would be scary for all of us, right? He knows exactly what you're thinking. He knows exactly what you're feeling. He knows why you're thinking it. He knows why you're feeling it. He knows how you feel from your toenails to the hair on your head. He knows how you feel. He's aware of that every second of every day of every one of us. Can you imagine? We would go crazy if we had that much information coming into our heads. And God keeps track of it all the time. Nothing escapes him. And even more impressive, if you can get more impressive than that, is he knows everything about every molecule, every atom, every action, every feeling in the future, everywhere. There's nothing that God doesn't know. Nothing. God has never had a question in his life. If he has a life, that's probably a bad phrase, in his existence. He has never had a question. Never once did he have a question about anything. No questions. He even knows what you're going to do tomorrow. He knows whether you're going to be saved or not in the end. He didn't determine it, but he knows it. He knows all of those things with certainty, with absolute certainty. Now, I can't even understand, fathom, Margaret's word, I can't even fathom the amount of information that is. And you know, they just completed the Facebook building up in Altoona, and they had a picture and a paper, all those servers lined up. Every light that you folks have, and I don't do likes and dislikes, but every light that you have is in Altoona, okay? It's all on those servers, every one of them. The amount of information in there is huge. 25,000 miles, I think it was, if I remember right, 25,000 miles of cable wiring. 25,000 miles. The amount of information is overwhelming. God has that under his hangnail. God understands all that in infinite detail. The important and the unimportant. Doesn't matter. God just isn't perusing the book and picking out the highlights. The important and the unimportant in infinite detail. We should be in awe of God's knowledge. And if you think about it, Jesus shared in that knowledge as well. Colossians says that Jesus made these worlds that we live in. By him and for him they were made. So, can you imagine being this being with all of this knowledge and all this power at your disposal living today? Today. You know how to make a car go on nothing. Okay? We don't know how to do that. You know how to make batteries last forever. We don't know how to do that. You know how. Now take that back to the time that Jesus was. Yeah, I was sitting there daydreaming. Jesus sitting there as they went about their food preparation and water. Water's a shortage in that area. Do you realize Jesus knew, sat there and knew how to make fresh water out of salt water? He knew how to do it by the ocean pools. He knew how to do it. You guys, Jesus sat there and sweat and was hot, and he knew how to make air conditioning. All those things that we take for granted and things we haven't even discovered yet, Jesus knows. And he brought himself down and subjected himself to living like us in times past. Now, mankind, since God created it, has been a learning being. We have been learning, naming things and identifying things and compartmentalizing things in various categories since God made us. In fact, he started us at it, since God made us. And we continue to learn a lot, a huge amount of information. But we are a long, long, long ways from knowing it all. Seems like everything you discover brings up two more things to discover. A lot of information that we have, and we're far from knowing it. As we learn more, we're impressed with either how much we know or how much we don't know. The wise people are impressed as they learn more with how much they don't know, not with how much they know. So, we're eventually going to get to what I'm talking about here. So, if God knows everything and I don't and you don't, if we don't know and we need to know to make a decision or determine an action, what do we do? What do we do? We guess.
Or the other word that we're really going to talk about,
is we make assumptions. We make assumptions. If I don't have all the facts, and I have to make a decision, then I'm going to use the facts that I have and assume some things. I assume them to be true, and then decide what I'm going to say, do, or act based on that. But I don't know everything. So I have to make assumptions. I have to make assumptions. And you and I make assumptions every single day, probably every moment of every day. And we're going to talk about that as we go along here. So it's necessary in some ways, if we're not all-knowing, for us to make assumptions. If you don't have information, you need to make a decision, you have to guess. You have to assume some things based on the information you have. And I think people have a tendency, we all have a tendency to develop a tendency, how's that for a phrase? We have a tendency to develop a tendency to choose positive or negative assumptions. We have a tendency to get in a habit of these assumptions that we have to make, because I don't know everything. These assumptions that we have to make, we tend to get into the habit of making a negative assumption or making a positive assumption about circumstances and about people. You remember the story of Esther? I love the story of Esther. It's a little aggravating at places to me, but there's one particular part in Esther, the sixth chapter. Remember Esther and her benefactor Mordecai, and Haman is the bad guy. And the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman was coming to the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. And the king's servant said unto him, "Behold, Haman standeth in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king said to him, "What shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor?" Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight to do more honor more than me? Haman answered the king, for the man whom the king delights to honor, let the royal apparel be brought which the king uses to wear, and the horse that the king rides upon, the crown royal which is set upon his head, and let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man with all whom the king delights to honor, and bring him on horseback through the city, through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Oops. Made an assumption. I've been in the king's favor for, I can't remember how long. I've done all these wonderful things for the king. The king's wanting to honor somebody. I don't know who he's wanting to honor. He didn't tell me. But my assumption would be it'd be me. So let's get the king's robes and the king's crown and the king's horse, and let's parade him through the street and make a hero out of him. Then the king said to Haman, make haste and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew, which it saith at the king's gate, let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. Then took Haman the apparel and the horse, had to kill him to do this. Then took Haman the apparel and the horse, and arrayed Mordecai, and brought him on horseback to the street of the city, and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. And Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house mourning, having his head covered. And Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. How many times have you done exactly that? Exactly that. Looked at the information you had, made an assumption, and found yourself in trouble. You know, Jesus was walking through the streets one day, had a huge crowd around him, and they were following him, and there was one man there who really wanted to see Jesus, but he wasn't very well liked. So the general crowd wouldn't let him through, couldn't push his way through, he wasn't tall enough to see over the top, so he assumed he would be lucky. He assumed he would be lucky if he saw Jesus from a distance. So Zacchaeus climbed up in a tree, and he looked down and saw Jesus. Why would he anticipate that Jesus would want to have to do anything to do with him? He's a tax collector. He's the scum of the earth. Even the crowd won't let him through. Why would you think? So I'm going to be content with climbing a tree and looking at Jesus from afar. And he assumed that Jesus wasn't interested. But Jesus was interested. Jesus said, Zacchaeus, come down from the tree. I'm going home with you. We're going to talk, we're going to eat. Careful of assumptions about successes and about failures and about circumstances. In Acts the 12th chapter, we talked about this before. In Acts the 12th chapter, the church was gathered to pray for Peter. I don't know what they were praying. But they were there to pray for Peter because Peter was in jail, and he was in the same jail that James had just been in, and he'd been killed. He'd been killed. The assumption was that Peter was going to see the same fate. But he didn't. The point is that you have to, in your life, make some assumptions. You have to make some, guesses. But be careful and know that they're guesses and know that they're assumptions because they get us in trouble about people and about things. Jesus, as he's walking on this earth, saw people that you and I would have assumed should not be allowed to get close to Jesus. Prostitutes, thieves, liars, all these people. And Jesus looked at them, and did Jesus look at a prostitute and see a liar, or see a Did Jesus look at a prostitute and see a prostitute? Yes. But Jesus also saw a soul that needed to be saved. Jesus was able to look at people and go past all the assumptions that you and I would be tending to make and see something else. And see something else. Jesus saw that in Matthew, the tax collector. He saw it in Zacchaeus. He saw it in all kinds of people. The good that they could be. Even God did that. God looked down and saw a mass murderer and I think he'd make a good apostle. And called Paul. Again, we have to be very, very careful about the assumptions that we make. In 1 Peter, the third chapter, beginning with verse 1, likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husband, that if any obey not the word, they also may, without the word, be won by the conversation of the wise, while they behold your chaste conversation, coupled with fear, whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, and that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. We don't anticipate that, okay? Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as you do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Let not the adorning be the outward adorning. Let not the adorning be the outward. Let not that be the important thing. James 1:2-9. My brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect to persons. For if there come into your assembly a man with a gold ring and goodly apparel, and there come in also a poor man in vile raiment, and ye have respect to him that weareth the gay clothing, and unto him say, sit thou here in a good place. Say to the poor, stand thou there, or sit here under my footstool. Are ye not then partial in yourselves, and are become judges of evil thoughts? Hearken, my beloved brethren, hath not God chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith, and heirs of the kingdom which he hath promised to them that love him? But you have despised the poor. Christians, you have despised the poor. Do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? Do not they blaspheme that worthy name by the which you are called? If you fulfill the royal law according to the scripture, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, you do well. But if you have respect to persons, you commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgressors. I think we all do that. Now, I haven't seen a time where someone has entered our assembly and we have said, you got a suit and tie on. You can sit right up here in front. Or someone has not been dressed that way and we had him sitting back. But I would challenge you to convince me that you don't make assumptions about people based on how they look. Based on how they look. Always bothers me in the office because we get a little cynical sometimes. Because we see people who, from all manner of problems and all manner of life, people that you probably wouldn't be comfortable going out to dinner with. I might not be comfortable going out to dinner with. See all the things. But if you're not careful, you start seeing everybody that way. Start seeing everybody negative. You start picking that out. And you start setting them in the back of your room and treating them differently. And I think we all do that. We all do that. Despite what we say, it's very easy to judge a book by its cover. And we make these assumptions based on things that have nothing to do with anything. We make these assumptions. I have a guy that I take care of that is covered, I mean covered, in tattoos. He has a little necklace that he rings, that wears, that has a skull on it. Can't remember if he has an earring or not. Usually comes in a shirt that has so it's black. And so. Now, I'm tempted to make an assumption already. I'm tempted. One of the nicest guys I know. Tempted to make an assumption. Aren't you? Don't you have things that you make assumptions on? Be careful of things you don't know. We're not God. We're not God, and there's a whole host of things we don't know. So be careful about making assumptions. You have to make them because you don't know everything, but you have to recognize that they are just that, hopefully a good guess. Hopefully a good guess, but still a guess. You know, Jesus saw in people potential instead of reality. The reality that was there, he saw, but what he really concentrated on was their potential. When they caught the woman in adultery and they brought him to him, Jesus didn't say, "Ah, come on, this is her first time. Yeah, probably all you guys have been guilty as well. Get off it. You know, I'm busy. This is no big deal." He didn't say adultery was no big deal. But when it was all over, he didn't preach a sermon about committing adultery either. He looked at her and he saw potential and he said, "Go and sin. That was sin you did. Go and sin no more." Saw potential. That's what we need. Jesus saw potential in people knowing their evil better than any of us could. We'll assume someone isn't the kind of person we'd like to be around. Jesus knew some of these people weren't the kind of people he wanted to be around. And he saw their potential. As we look at someone that we wish would become a Christian, I'm afraid that I sometimes think, now, if they were to become a Christian, they would have to, I would hope they would change this and this and this and this. And I want to say, and I want to learn to say, if they become a Christian, I hope they learn to love Jesus more and more and more. Because if they do that, that this and this and this will take care of itself. When we see people, sometimes we have a tendency to assume the negative, assume the worst. I don't know why necessarily. I have a few reasons. I think there's a psychiatric, psychological term called projection. Are you familiar with projection? Projection means as long as I can project my problems onto someone else and we can talk about them, I don't have to deal with my own. That's one reason I see negative in everybody. It makes me feel somehow superior. Man, I'm glad I'm not like that publican. Look at that man. Just look at him. I'm glad I'm not like that publican, the Pharisee said. And sometimes I make negative judgments about people based on assumptions that are just lousy. What their skin's like, what their hairstyle's like, where they're at, their language. Derek is out for a minute, but Friday night, he and Mason were supposed to be headed to Cedar Rapids for a show there. And he got outside of Prairie City, and they broke down. And then they fired it up again and broke down again. So it was getting late, and it was cold Friday night. And so I went out, called Derek, and went out and made a couple phone calls. And the one guy, it's nice to be in a small community because I know everybody, okay? So one guy I called, he comes out, and he's a mechanic. Now, talk about language. I was not impressed, and I knew I wasn't. I take care of him. I knew I wasn't impressed with that. But you talk about, here's someone in the middle of the night is out in the cold doing something as a favor to somebody else. There's good there. There's good there. But I guarantee you that if any one of us were sitting next to him at a function, you would move. Because you would assume there wasn't any good there because of his language. Now, I'm not condoning language, okay? What I'm saying is we need to be careful about making assumptions about people and their value and their potential based on just that, assumptions. Guesses. We need to be careful. And you know, if we think about it, if we don't know everything, and so we have to make some assumptions, and I don't know which assumption's right about a circumstance or a person, why wouldn't I choose the one that made me feel better? You ever notice, some people, when they hit a situation, they will always choose the one that makes them feel worse. They'll always choose it. It was a guess. It was an assumption. And they'll assume the one that makes them feel worse. Why? I have a choice. I don't know which one makes me feel good, which one's real. I'm not smart enough to know which one's real. So until I do know which one's real, I want to choose the one that makes me feel good. Why do people run around choosing, making assumptions that make them feel bad? They're assumptions. They're guesses. Because we don't know everything. Obviously, we should investigate and get more facts if we can. But we need to see the positive. You and I, as Christians, need to be caught up in the wonder of God. Do you ever wonder how Henry Ford would react if he were to come back today and crawl in one of your cars and you take him on a 15-minute drive? I bet his jaw would be on the floorboards in wonder. We, of all people, should be in wonder of God. In wonder of God, this all-knowing God who loved us, who loved you, who loved me, gave his Son for us, and loves us every single day. Knowing what we're like. Can you believe that? Knowing what we're like. Knowing how fragile, how faulty we are, and loves us every single day. Gave his Son for me, loved me, and loves me every day, knowing me as I really am. Now that is full of wonder. Wonderful. Because none of you know me as I really am. Okay? And I don't know any of you fully as you really are. But God, he knows. And he still cares. He still cares. He still loves you. He still wants you to be saved eternally. This morning I wanted to just think for a while about our limitations. I'm not knowing everything. What those limitations do, they force us to make assumptions, and how dangerous those assumptions can be if we're not very, very careful with them and recognize, A, that they are assumptions, and B, try to get information so we don't have to make assumptions and we can know. But always understand that you as a human being are making assumptions every day of your life. Careful. They're guesses. Careful when you're talking about people and their value. Careful when you're talking about circumstances. They're guesses. We just aren't God, and we aren't going to know. God does know. He loves you in spite of yourself. And he offers you forgiveness because he loves you. We're going to sing the closing song.